We can all recall moments of insight when we had a great idea, a transformative thought, the glimpse of a project that could change our lives. A day, a week, or a year later, the thought has been forgotten or become a distant memory. At best, it might have been. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 92, 17 Tamos and Us. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Repetition of ritual is a defining feature of Judaism and Jewish life. Rabbinic literature famously describes a debate as to which is the most symbolically central verse in the Torah, meaning which one best captures Judaism in its entirety. Several answers are offered. The Shema, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The obligation to love one's fellow, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Or the verse in Genesis, Ze Sefer Torah Ta'adam, this is the book of the Torah of humanity. But in another midrash, which is not extant in the original rabbinic text, but is cited in later sources, a rabbi by the name of Ben Pazi is quoted with another opinion, that the verse in the Torah which captures every other is the one commanding the offering in the tabernacle and temple known as the Tamid, the constant offering, the offering brought twice a day. One sheep shall be brought every morning upon the altar, and a second sheep shall be brought toward evening. The meaning of this midrash is clear. If this verse is so symbolic, it is because religious repetition is a value in itself because it forms us as few other things can. And the embodiment of constant worship of the divine and the centrality of the temple in Jewish life was reflected first and foremost, in this Tamid ritual, this constant offering in the temple. Yet in the last weeks of the battle for Jerusalem, this constant korban, this eternal offering, came to an end on a date that till this day is remembered and mourned, and which begins the period of the annual lamentation for ancient Jerusalem. Let us review what we have seen thus far about the battle for Jerusalem. And as always, in this subject, I am guided by the invaluable book by Gershon Bar Kochva and Aaron Horovitz, A Temple in Flames. The Jewish rebels were divided into two groups, one led by Shimon bar Giora, which held much of the city, and the other by Yochanan of Gush Halav, which held the Temple Mount. The two bands had finally joined together to battle the Romans and succeeded in driving them out of the city. But as the siege of Titus continued and famine suffused Jerusalem, Titus decided to lead another assault. The Temple Mount, which extended beyond the walls of the city and of course had walls of its own, was defended by another edifice, the Antonia Fortress, at the Temple Mount's northern end. Titus therefore decided to attack Antonia, assuming that the city itself would fall immediately thereafter. Thus, in the early summer of the year 70, in the beginning of the month of Tammuz, siege towers were set up against the Antonia, and, in another profound irony, the defenders atop the Temple Mount utilized against the Romans their own siege towers that had been originally built to fight their fellow Jews within the city. On the third day of the month, the Romans brought down a wall of Antonia, and Horovitz and Bar Kochva tell us what happened next. Quote, when the dust cleared, however, a bitter surprise awaited the Romans. Yochanan's fighters had prepared for the collapse of the wall and had built another wall behind it. The Romans, who had been sure they were about to break into the fortress, were stunned and confused. The powerful fire that rained down on the Romans made clear to all the fate that awaited any legionary who dared scale the wall. Titus stood before his troops and in a passionate speech promised valuable prizes and medals of valor to soldiers who would ascend the wall. One brave fighter named Sabinus managed to climb up unscathed, but when he reached the top, he tripped on a stone and fell to the ground, where he was killed by the Jews. His comrades who climbed up with him were either killed or injured. For 2 days, the Romans prepared for another assault. On 5 Tammuz, at the 9th hour of the night, around 2 a.m., in complete darkness, a small task force of 24 men advanced in silence. Most were members of the 5th Legion. Among them were the Legion's standard bearer and its trumpeter. They slaughtered the sleeping Jewish sentries and took over the wall. When the signal was sounded with a trumpet blast, Titus led the main force that mounted the wall. End quote. Thus did the Antonia fortress fall. While some Romans even made it into the temple, they were driven back because again, finally, the rebels led by Shimon in Jerusalem raced to the Temple Mount to unite with their fellow rebels. Starting a week later, on 13 Tammuz, the Roman assault from Antonia on the temple itself began. And when that initially failed, Titus decided to destroy the Antonia Fortress and utilize the site for the building of an embankment in order to attack the Temple Mount. According to Josephus, this decision occurred and the process began on the 17th of Tammuz. And it was at this point, he writes, that Titus sent him, Josephus, to speak to his fellow Jews. Now here in Josephus' account, we find a striking parallel to rabbinic texts, because Josephus tells us that the Jews atop the mount were terribly sad because, for the first time due to the war, they had been unable to bring the daily offering, the Tamid. This is Josephus, quote, "And now Titus gave orders to his soldiers that were with him to dig up the foundations of the Tower of Antonia and make him a ready passage for his army to come up, while he himself had Josephus brought to him, for he had been informed that on that very day, which was the 17th day of Panemus, Tammuz, the sacrifice called the daily sacrifice had failed and had not been offered to God for want of men to offer it, and that the people were grievously troubled at it." End quote. Josephus further tells us that then, speaking to the Jews, he, quote, "earnestly prayed them to spare their own city and to prevent that fire which was just ready to seize upon the temple and to offer their usual sacrifices to God therein. At these words of his, a great sadness and silence were observed among the people," end quote. I find this incredibly poignant, and we must ponder for a moment why it is so. The city is starving. The Romans have taken Antonia and seem poised to gain victory. And the sadness that descends is because the daily offering has suddenly ceased, because the temple itself no longer has the constant biblical rites performed within it. That is why the Jews are sad. That is how much, even in the midst of everything, the temple service is loved. And here, as I mentioned, is the striking parallel to rabbinic literature, because to this day, the 17th of Tammuz is marked with fasts by traditional Jews. And according to the rabbis, this is because several terrible tragedies occurred on this day, 17 Tammuz. This, the rabbis write, is the day Jerusalem was breached, which either conflicts slightly with Josephus' account, or, as Horowitz and Bar Kokhba write, the rabbis perhaps refer to the destruction of the Antonia Fortress in order to begin the final assault on the Temple Mount. But the rabbis, in perfect parallel with Josephus, also insist that the cessation of the daily sacrifice on 17 Tammuz is one of the reasons why the annual fast is observed on this day. And to this day, 17 Tammuz begins the three-week period of mourning for the temple. Josephus further writes that he continued his speech, debating Yochanan of Gush Chalav, who stood amidst the rebels on the Temple Mount. And according to Josephus' account, the Jews were ultimately addressed by Titus himself, who made reference to a stone that sits today in the Israel Museum, one engraved in Greek, warning non-Jews not to enter certain areas of the Temple Mount. According to Josephus, Titus pointed to the stone as an example of how the Romans were willing to let the temple service continue, according to Jewish tradition, as long as the Jews politically submitted, saying, quote, "Have not you, vile wretches that you are, by our permission, put up this partition wall before your sanctuary? Have not you been allowed to put up the pillars thereto belonging at due distances, and on it to engrave in Greek and in your own letters this prohibition, that no foreigner should go beyond that wall?" End quote. Titus then promised, again according to Josephus, that if surrender took place, nothing would happen to the sanctuary. Surrender, of course, did not occur. And while the burning of the temple was still 3 weeks away, it was at this moment that the practicing of Judaism in its fullest sense was halted, for this was the last time in Jewish history that offerings were brought upon the altar. For the next 2,000 years, so many of the laws in the Torah, which pertain to the rituals of the temple, would not be observed. Jews would not fulfill the verse that has become so celebrated, "One sheep shall be brought in the morning, and the second sheep shall be brought toward evening." But the truth is that even as the daily offerings disappeared, the message they embodied was retained. As we will see, the daily prayer services, Shacharit Mincha and Arbit or Ma'ariv, continued to parallel precisely the times during the day when the Tamid was offered and its attendant rituals performed. And Judaism survived by celebrating the constancy of dedication that the Tamid offering itself embodied. In a wonderful essay, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs described the meaning of this mysterious midrash, Ben Pazi pronouncing the obligation of the constant offering as the central symbolic verse of the Torah. Rabbi Sachs wrote, quote, "Achieving any form of spiritual growth requires sustained effort and daily rituals. The meaning of Ben Pazi's statement is clear. All the high ideals in the world, the human person as God's image, belief in God's unity, and the love of neighbor, count for little until they are turned into habits of action that become habits of the heart. We can all recall moments of insight when we had a great idea, a transformative thought, the glimpse of a project that could change our lives. A day, a week, or a year later, the thought has been forgotten or become a distant memory. At best, it might have been. Rabbi Sacks added that Judaism's greatness is that it takes high ideals and exalted visions, image of God, faith in God, love of neighbor, and turns them into patterns of behavior. Halakha, Jewish law, involves a set of routines that, like those of the great creative minds, reconfigures the brain, giving discipline to our lives and changing the way we feel, think, and act, end quote. Rabbi Sacks further reflected how important this message is for our larger society today. We have developed in the West, he writes, a strange view of religious experience, that it's what overwhelms you when something happens completely outside the run of normal experience. You climb a mountain and look down. You are miraculously saved from danger. You find yourself part of a vast and cheering crowd. It's how the German Lutheran theologian Rudolf Otto defined the holy, as a mystery, mysterium, both terrifying, tremendum, and fascinating, fascinans. You are awed by the presence of something vast. We have all had such experiences. But Rabbi Sacks adds, that is all they are, experiences. They linger in the memory, but they are not part of everyday life. They are not woven into the texture of our character. They do not affect what we do or achieve or become. Judaism is about changing us so that we become creative artists whose greatest creation is our own life. And that needs daily rituals, shacharit, mincha, ma'ariv, the food we eat, the way we behave at work or in the home, the choreography of holiness, end quote. The constancy of rituals sustained Jewish life. On 17 Tammuz in 70 CE, the Tamid offering ceased, the temple service ceased, but the dream of its restoration never died, and the religious message it embodied allowed Judaism to endure for centuries to come. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.